Welcome to Nice Ashes. I'm Mike.
And I'm Nate. What are we smoking today, Mike?
We are smoking the Flor de Oliva Maduro.
Very exciting.
Oh, yes.
I've not heard of this before. Is the Flor de Oliva must be the brand?
It is, and it is a very reasonably priced cigar.
Okay. We're no stranger to very reasonable priced cigars. All right, I'm lit. I'm not quite sure what all flavors and stuff I'm getting off of this one. Kind of the standard, like, Maduro stuff, right?
It's pretty standard dark spice Maduro. Very firm cigar. Mine is very firm.
It is crazy firm. Whatever it's taken, sign me up.
Yeah, it's pretty standard Maduro fare so far on the light. Nothing offensive.
Nothing offensive, nothing surprising. Kind of what you expect. It's dark as a Maduro could be. What are you pairing yours with, Mike?
Well, I'm having myself a white Russian and some Wata.
Nice. I've got myself a black Russian because, as I mentioned two episodes ago, I don't dislike the white Russians with the cream or the half and half, whatever you end up mixing in there. But I really just like the Kahlua, you know, and the vodka, of course. But I like the black Russian. It's a little less sweet, a little less filling. Because you don't have the cream, so. And I've also got a Coors Light, the Colorado water, I guess.
Might as well have it, right?
It's sitting there. It's not going to drink itself.
I don't like Coors Light. I don't like light beer, generally. I like Coors Banquet, though, which is bizarre, because it's really not that much different.
It's not that much different, but Coors Banquet, I think, is better than Coors Light. I'm not, by and large, a huge Coors Light fan. I used to like them more out of all the light beer, but one of my buddies had me do a light beer taste test, and McGolden actually came out on the top of the blind taste test that I did. So, but again, I'm usually not a light beer drinker. Give me an IPA or hazy or a rye or something. I don't know. Give me anything almost other than a light beer, but can't complain. Right. It's there. I've got the black Russian, so I'm not too worried about the alcohol content tonight.
I don't like IPAs either. They're so popular right now.
Well, we know you're a stout guy, but it depends on the IPA for me, because I don't really want the pucker your lips type. You know, that everybody's kind of been huge into, like, oh, yeah, we got to get their lips to peel back when they drink this and peel off the tooth enamel or whatever. I really I've been digging the hazy IPAs, specifically the New England variety, and they're a little more fruity and less hoppy. So sure. I like those a little bit more.
See, and I like a sour. I like good sours. Obviously,
sours
like
are good. Yep.
Yeah. Brown ales, black ales.
Yep. I like red ales quite a bit too.
Oh, yeah. Red ales are good. I even like a good Pilsner if it's like a good Pilsner.
Yeah.
Uda Pils in Minneapolis makes a really good Pilsner.
Yep.
But the American light lager is just not my jam.
Not your jammy jam. That's fair.
Nothing wrong with it, but not my thing.
Yeah, but you like the Natterdays, and that's a light beer.
Yeah, Natterdays. It's flavored. That's like a weird once in a year.
Lemonade light beer summertime.
Yeah, I like Grain Belt, like regular Grain Belt.
Yeah, see, I don't mind Grain Belt, but I'd rather have the Northeast from them.
I like Northeast, but I think I like Premium better, only because it reminds me of my childhood.
Yeah, when you were 10 years old, smoking and drinking with your pappy.
That's right.
Yeah.
Hey, my grandfather, he was a big fan of the Grain Belt Premium, and his beer fridge out in his shop always had Grain Belt Premium in a bottle.
Nice.
Yeah, and he'd give them away to anybody who wanted them. He was not hoarding. He wanted everybody to have one for sure. So I don't think my grandfather ever went anywhere once he retired without a 6-pack of beer with him. Anywhere.
That's like what we all should aspire to.
Right. Yeah. Probably not the healthiest decision, but
if you're not driving after drinking it, it's fine.
Oh, he'd have anybody drive him home for sure.
Yeah.
I drove him home way before I could legally drive a car.
Yep.
So, yeah.
There you go.
So what are we talking about, Nate?
Well, I've got a topic for us. I'm going to preface this topic with a little anecdotal story, which will lead into our topic. So I don't know if all the listeners know, but we have a Disney Plus subscription through our phone plan, and it's the only subscription that I pay for, because I do have two small children, and it's easy to save those movies for offline viewing when we're taking road trips and things in the car, and it just makes everything in my life a little bit easier. And I know we like to shit on Disney all the time on the podcast, but, you know, they've made classic films, and I recently rewatched a film I probably haven't seen since my childhood. It's the original 1940s Pinocchio, and I rewatched this, and this is the first time my daughter had ever seen it, but we had read a little, like, library-style book of the Pinocchio story, and so she wanted to see the movie, and so I showed her the movie. Mike, are you very familiar with Pinocchio? The Disney version?
I have not seen it since I was a child.
Okay. But I mean, like, you remember the gist, like the little puppet kind of comes to life and he's got a cricket, Jiminy Cricket, the conscience, and Pinocchio goes on.
He lies and his nose grows.
He
goes to Pedophile Island and...
Epstein Island. He makes a slew of really bad decisions and everybody's like, oh, Pinocchio is such a bad kid, he's got to learn. And that's kind of the gist of it, right? Like, Pinocchio is the one that has to learn.
Right.
But I watched the movie again from 1940. And so Geppetto, for whatever reason, really old fellow. But I suppose, right, like, you've seen those memes online where it's like, when you were 30 years old in 1980, you looked like George Costanza from Seinfeld. But if you're 30 years old in 2024, you look like Timothée Chalamet. So he might have been 30 years old, this Geppetto guy. But he had white hair and, you know, looked elderly. But who's to say? Anyway, he carves this marionette puppet, Pinocchio. He's got a cat, Figaro, and a goldfish, Chloe, or something. Anyway, he wishes upon the wishing star, as all people do in Disney films, right? That Pinocchio could be a real boy. So the blue fairy comes down and grants Pinocchio some sort of life, but he's still a marionette. He's not an actual, true, like, flesh and blood boy. But if he can learn to be brave and good and all this stuff, then he can become a real boy. And there's this cricket, Jiminy, who just kind of, like, he's a home invader, right? He was in trashy clothes, and he snuck into Geppetto's home and warmed himself by Geppetto's fire and was going to make a bed out of Geppetto's belongings to sleep. So he's supposed to be, like, the hero of the story, right? Like, the conscience. Like, he's the one that teaches Pinocchio all this stuff about how to be a real boy. And so he gets assigned the role of conscience from the blue fairy, and he gets fancy clothes, and he wants a gold star that says that he's, like, a conscience or, like, an official being or entity or some such thing. Well, the same night that Pinocchio becomes alive, Geppetto wakes up and sees Pinocchio is alive. And what does Geppetto do? Does Geppetto sit there and teach Pinocchio anything? No, he sends the kid to school the very next day. He's like, well, you got to go to school tomorrow. That's what you have to do. And so he just, like, he gives him a book that I guess Geppetto had laying about and sends the kid out the door. Where is Jiminy? Jiminy's sleeping in like a bum. So Pinocchio goes on his way to school and encounters, and of course he's like 5-10 minutes behind all the other kids going to school. And he's in some, like, Bavarian town or some shit. I don't know where the fuck he is. And he's, like, well behind the other kids because he didn't get out the door right away. Because Geppetto had to put a vest on him and give him his books and say bye to him 15 times or whatever. Never minding to tell him anything that would help him in his life. He just got born last night, right? So he doesn't know anything. And Geppetto's like, okay, go to school. Well, Geppetto doesn't even tell him where the fucking school is. Like, what the fuck, man? And Jiminy's sleeping. He's sleeping in. It's his first warm night in a long time. He's a bum, right? A hobo, I don't know. Is that a thing I can say these days? Can I call Jiminy Cricket a hobo?
I think hobo is safe, but other words that sound like that are not.
Like vagrant? Is vagrant okay?
I was not thinking of vagrant, but vagrant sounds like it would be fine.
Dude, I know what you're thinking, but that's not what I'm saying. It's a Disney movie. And so on his way to school, he meets a fox and I guess it's a cat, and they convince him to go, and they use this word in the film, and surprisingly enough, Pinocchio does not have a classic boilerplate Disney disclaimer at the beginning of it. But there is a gypsy in town with a marionette show, with a puppet show. And I believe gypsy is not in the modern parlance anymore.
Do you have to call them Roma?
I don't know what you have to call them. I don't know. I'm saying I felt like that was kind of out of the preferred term. Like, it wasn't the preferred term anymore.
Is it because they're Europeans, so you can call them whatever you want and get away with it?
Not me. It's Disney. So I'm just saying that they call this guy a gypsy, like a big fat gypsy is what they call him. And right. Yeah. There was no disclaimer at the beginning of the film. So take that for what it's worth. But anyway, and so they convinced Pinocchio, which isn't hard to do because he was literally born yesterday, to go and skip school. And Pinocchio tried to go to school. He's like, no, I should go to school. And they're like, oh, no, you want to be an actor, an actor's life, and blah, blah, blah. And so he goes and does this. And then he's already enlisted by these two to go, and they're going to sell him to this puppet place. And then after Pinocchio's already enlisted with these, Jiminy Cricket like wakes up, and he's like, where am I? I'm late for my first day of being a conscience. Well, great fucking job, man. Like, it's already game over because nobody gave this poor kid any training or any words of advice or anything. They said, go to school. That's all they told him. Here's the door. Get the fuck out of here. And now he's going to be like an actor on stage. And so what does Jiminy do? Does Jiminy like fight with Pinocchio? No, he tells them, oh, you shouldn't go with these two. But Pinocchio's already like, well, this sounds kind of fun. I'm going to do it. So he goes and does it. And Jiminy, what does Jiminy Cricket do? The conscience. Does he stay and fight for Pinocchio? No, he gets real down on his luck. And he like kicks a puddle or some shit. And he's like, well, I guess he doesn't need me anymore. And blah, blah, blah. And then he's like AWOL for hours. And then it's evening time suddenly, and the puppet show's about to start. So where the fuck was Jiminy Cricket this whole time? Feeling sorry for himself in the gutter? Like, what the fuck? And then Pinocchio does the famous, like, I got no strings to hold me down, that whole bit. And that's when Jiminy Cricket suddenly shows back up at the place and is like, oh, he's a star. He's not going to need me. And then leaves. And then the gypsy guy locks Pinocchio into a birdcage and is like, you're going to come with me. And when you outlive your welcome, I'm going to chop you up to firewood. And Jiminy Cricket's like, oh, he doesn't need me anymore. And he's like walking home sadly in the rain. And he's like, oh, you know what? I should say bye to him. Like, that can't hurt. I know he's a big famous movie star now or actor now. Like, that can't hurt. So he hops into the thing and discovers that Pinocchio is locked in a cage and everything's terrible. And he tries to pick the lock, and the blue fairy has to come and bail her asses out of this whole jam, you know. But the whole narrative is Jiminy's like, well, please give him one more chance. Well, what about you? You're the conscience. You're supposed to look out for him. You slept in, and you didn't do jack shit. And you're going to let him go off with this gypsy to be chopped into firewood. And now you came back because you wanted to say goodbye because you would feel guilty if you didn't. Like, you're the villain of this story, dude. Like, I don't know how to tell anyone this. Like, Jiminy Cricket is the villain of Pinocchio. Because then what happens? They get out, and they try and go home, and Jiminy says, I'm going to race you home. And Jiminy takes off and runs as fast as a cricket can run, I guess, which is pretty fucking fast, because the little wooden boy has no chance. And who should find him but the fox and the cat thing again? And that's when they bring him to Epstein Island. And Jiminy Cricket is like, oh. And Jiminy Cricket doesn't show up until Pinocchio already has donkey ears. So what the fuck is Jiminy Cricket doing? He can get from a wagon outside of town back to Geppetto's home, but he can't find Pinocchio after Pinocchio goes to Epstein Island. And then he goes there and tells Pinocchio to knock it off. But like at this point, from Pinocchio's perspective, what has Jiminy Cricket done? Nothing. He hasn't saved you once. He hasn't even been able to bail you out once. And then Pinocchio gets swallowed by the whale, and Jiminy Cricket isn't even inside the whale. He can't get into the whale. Jiminy Cricket is sitting in a bottle fighting with seagulls. And Pinocchio goes in all on his own and figures out how to get the whale to sneeze with the fire. And then Jiminy Cricket is like, yay, we did it. And it's like, bitch, we did what? Like, you haven't been here for Pinocchio once in this entire film. And you know what the worst thing is, Mike? At the end of the fucking film, Jiminy Cricket gets his shiny gold star for doing absolute jack shit the entire film.
Now, like, it's been a long time since I went to school.
Man.
But I'm pretty sure that on my very first day of school, my parents were there and drop me off. Like, everybody's parents had to drop them off on the very first day of school. Is that not the case? It's like, I don't have any children. I'll tell you what.
But my daughter just started pre-K. She rides the bus all by herself, but we took her to school like three times before the first day of school, and the bus will not pick her up unless one of us is there, and it will not drop her off unless one of us is standing there at the bus stop. So if we weren't there, they would bring her back to school.
And that makes a lot of sense.
Until we got her, right?
That makes a lot of sense.
And nowadays we have an app, we have a bus app that tells us where the bus is at all times, and you know, we know when it's coming, we know when it's going, we know where it is. So if so, you know, so, and I understand that this is a film made in the 1940s. But sure as shit, Jiminy Cricket is no conscience the entire film. He doesn't do anything other than I told you so, but he never told anybody so anything to start with.
I feel like even in the 1940s, you would have dropped your kid off at school the first day when they're like 5 years old, 4 years old, however old they are.
Yes.
You know?
And even so, right? Like if they were 4 or 5 years old and they had lived 4 or 5 years and you would tell them, you'd walk, here's the school. It's right here. Can you get there on your own? Yes. Okay, fine. No big deal. I mean, right? We were riding BMX bikes out in the streets in the 80s, 90s, and the parents didn't give a shit. They had to put a commercial on TV to tell the parents, like, hey, it's like 9:30 at night. Do you know where your kids are?
Right. Yeah. I remember that being, it was just like 1990, probably, and I'm riding around on my bike.
It's like 1940, but like, you know, your kid already would have gone with you to the butcher to get the slab of whatever for dinner, right? So you'd be like, oh, there's a school, by the way. Yeah, okay, we've gone to the butcher now for 5 years. Go find the school. It's right next to the butcher shop or whatever it is. Like, you wouldn't be that worried about it because it's a small town, right? But your child would know. But Pinocchio was literally born the night before. And Geppetto's like, go to school. Get out of here. And Jiminy Cricket's like, this is the first warm night I've had ever. And I know I've been tasked with this monumental goal. But fuck that. I need my sleep. You know, I'm a cricket. I got a hard life. Like, what the fuck is that about? So I was shocked because I always thought like, well, if Pinocchio only would, you know, I'm ready to watch him. Like, well, Pinocchio, this asshole kid would have just listened to Jiminy Cricket the whole time, everything would have been fine. And you know what's funny is Jiminy Cricket never said anything until after the fact, and a lot of times was very reluctant to even be around Pinocchio in the film. And I'm like, no, Pinocchio didn't have a chance. Like, why should he have to suffer all this stuff? Because nobody bothered to take time out of their day to even give him any kind of clue of what to do. I mean, Geppetto watched him like burn his finger on a candle. And then he was like, oh my God, this kid, like, and so he like tries to put Pinocchio out. And he's like, oh, fire's dangerous. That's the only advice Pinocchio has before going to school the next morning. Fire is dangerous. So I don't, you know what I mean? Like, how
as
is
far as Jiminy advice Cricket, goes, it's good advice, but it's probably not
going to
be
bad
helpful.
Advice, but it's not going to cover every instance in life, right? Like, right. Oh, these two people want me to be in a marionette show. Well, it's not fire, so it's got to be good, right?
Yeah. How about some lessons about how to count? Maybe basic ABCs.
Maybe, you know. Well, I think Geppetto said, like, don't talk to anybody on the way there or back. But you can't tell a child that once. Like, that's like a learned thing. You know. So I feel like Pinocchio was done a dirty by Jiminy and the Blue Fairy and by Geppetto. And it's like Geppetto really wanted a son or a child, and then he did jack shit with it. And then, like, Pinocchio didn't come home, and then he went on this big search because he was worried and somehow ended up in a whale because he felt like Pinocchio sailed out to sea or something. Like, I don't understand his thought process there.
Well, you know, children well known, they love to sail the ocean alone when they are in grade school.
I tell you what. Yeah, we went to a lake here, a park that had a little lake, and I turned my eyes away once, and I looked back, and my daughter had built a complete sailboat, 16-footer, and it had a mast and everything, and I was like, no, you can't, like, stop. And I don't know how she did it with what she found on the beach, but I tell you what, kids love sailing the seas.
Well, did you get her before or after she started the outboard to get out into the water to throw the sail out, you know?
Well, she had the two oars is what she fashioned.
I see.
She's not quite to internal combustion engines yet, but
soon.
Soon. It's next. It's next up. That's the next growth leap I've read. So, with that being said, I wanted to talk. That was my long way of kind of introducing the topic for this episode is it's not really the true endings of fairy tales, but it's maybe the original endings of fairy tales. I did a lot of research, and apparently because they're fairy tales, there's not a quote unquote true ending. You know what I mean?
Sure. There's multiple sources.
But I know that if you read the Brothers Grimm unedited versions of the fairy tales, you'd be quite surprised as to how a lot of these ones made popular by Disney end. So
I would not be surprised.
No, I know. We would. So we're going to start with Pinocchio.
Yes.
Some of these are longer than others, but so basically Pinocchio deals with a bunch of tribulations and trials on his adventures. He's beaten and mocked, transformed into a donkey, you know, on Play Island or whatever it is. Playland, or I can't remember what it's called. And in the little book that we read, he turns fully into a donkey and is forced to perform circus tricks. But he's so bad at the circus tricks that the circus owner throws him into the ocean, which then magically turns him back to a puppet. And then he happens to get swallowed by the same whale that Geppetto was swallowed by. But the original version, it was written by Carlo Collodi. And the living puppet, Pinocchio, is a wretched and disobedient boy. Wretched and disobedient boy. Pinocchio, in the original story, even kills Jiminy Cricket, his conscience. And the author wanted the story to end by hanging the wooden boy, but the publishers said that's too dark. So that's...
There we go. What happened to him in the original story then?
It doesn't say. It didn't say what happened. I think it's kind of... I don't know. I don't know. I'm sorry, Mike. I'm sorry. I don't know what happened to him. Somewhere between what happens in the Disney version and being hanged, I guess. Take your pick. In the library book that I read with my daughter, he pushes some boys into the ocean, and he gets like harassed by the police, of course. And then a fisherman catches him in his net and wants to like toss him back in the ocean. But Pinocchio is so pitiful that he is like, just get away from me kind of thing, because he goes and like takes care of Geppetto after Geppetto got really sick from being in the whale. The blue fairy comes back and turns him to a real boy, but his puppet body is still there. So it's kind of a little weird because like the dead puppet body is there, but he's a real boy outside of the puppet body. So
weird.
Yeah, it gets kind of strange. The next one is Rapunzel. I'm sure you know the story of Rapunzel.
Oh, yes.
So she's kept in a tower by an evil person who hates her, who's a woman, as a lot of these like are. It's like the evil mother-in-law kind of stuff. But it's originally from the Pentamerone by G.M. Battista Basile, and it was published in Naples in 1634. In 1700, there's a French version published, but the prince who comes to save her jumps from the fairy's tower, falls into thorns, and is blinded. And then Rapunzel's tears heal him. In the Brothers Grimm version in 1812, they published one, and then in 1857, they changed the fairy to a sorceress. But the prince was blinded and had to go wander to the desert, and Rapunzel left the tower and wandered the desert and eventually found the prince again and then cried, which healed the prince's vision.
Romantic.
So it's a little more complex than like scaling the tower to save save the princess. The next one is Sleeping Beauty. Yeah, it's a 14th century French romance, Perse Forest. It's very similar to what eventually became known as Sleeping Beauty now. And in the earliest versions, the protagonist is presumed dead, not merely in an enchanted sleep. So when the king rides by and rapes the unconscious princess, she then gives birth to twins while she's still comatose, and then trying to breastfeed, one of the babies removes a poisoned splinter from her finger, and the king's wife, because he's already married of course, becomes murderously jealous of Sleeping Beauty, and she tells her cook to murder Sleeping Beauty's children and serve them to the father. But the cook tricks the queen by slaughtering lambs instead, and the princess has fallen in love with her rapist. And the story ends with Sleeping Beauty, the king, and their kids forming a happy, loving family, as always happens with cases of rape.
That's what I've been reliably informed of in the news media as of late.
So, you know, it's a fairy tale, but I don't know that it's a children's fairy tale.
I don't think a lot of the fairy tales were for children. They were for people who could read, which is a pretty limited group back in the day.
Or it was, well, wasn't it? They were all kind of like orally told, like an oral history fairy tale. And then the Brothers Grimm just published them to kind of preserve them. Yeah,
they're like folklore tales.
Yeah, much like the American South when, I can't remember who, but somebody went and tried to record all these stories from the enslaved people and document them, right?
Yes.
They did this with music, too. They went and tried to record as much music as they could from that region. Okay, the next one is Snow White. And, of course, the Brothers Grimm, they're going to be up in here a lot of time. But there are a lot of oral versions that are similar to Snow White, Armenian, Turkish, Italian, and Scottish stories. The Scottish tale is called Gold Tree and Silver Tree. In the first Brothers Grimm version, Snow White's birth mother, not stepmother, wants to kill her and eat her organs. And then, of course, in Disney's version of Snow White, the evil queen just wants the organs as proof that she was murdered.
Now,
in the Grimm's version,
I thought that the story of Snow White was that a Jewish woman was the evil queen that wanted her stepdaughter killed, who was Latino, who took refuge with seven magical creatures whom she mooched off of, but did nothing for, and then scolded them for not cleaning their house properly.
Yeah, I don't care what they told you in school, Snow White was black. So she lived with seven magical they-thems, and so in the, sorry, I guess that movie's still coming out, though, the new live-action Snow White.
Yeah, we'll see. We'll see.
We'll see. We'll probably do a movie review on it, I guess, right?
I guess I can gut it.
Well, you know what? We should probably do the live-action Little Mermaid and the live-action Snow White, since those were the most egregious.
I don't think that the live-action Little Mermaid was bothersome other than potentially the casting. I didn't hear any criticism of the story or the acting.
Well, there are people upset about the casting of the race.
Right, which is pretty much nonsense, I would say. It's a Disney
movie, it's a mermaid.
Right.
I don't know. It's a fictional being, so I don't know that it matters what race they are. Personally, I don't give a shit. It's a fucking mermaid. Who cares? Snow White's a little different because the first sentence in Snow White is Snow White had skin white as snow, right? So I don't.
Yeah, she's semi-magical. Like,
fairy tales, race shouldn't be important. But if you're going to stay true to like the origin of everything, sometimes like there are, let's say, European fairy tales, and there are African fairy tales, and there are Chinese fairy tales, like Mulan. Like, nobody's going to make Mulan, hopefully, white or black, right? Like, Mulan is the Chinese fairy tale.
I don't care what they told you in school. Mulan was a redhead.
That would be the day. That would be full circle if we have a redheaded, fair-skinned Mulan.
A ginger they.
Yes. Gesundheit. All right. So in the Grimm's version of Snow White, Snow White is 7 years old when the queen decides to kill her. She lives with dwarves for an unspecified time and then is presumed dead before she's revived and marries the prince. And I guess most people believe about 10 years have passed, so she'd be about 17 when she's revived. The Grimm's Snow White contains a glass coffin and poisoned apple, like most of the later versions. And before giving her the poisoned apple, the queen in disguise tries to suffocate Snow White with a, is it bodice or bodice?
Bodice.
And poison her with a comb. And at the end of the Grimm's version, the evil queen is forced to dance in red hot shoes until she dies, which is different than the Disney version where she is cast off of a cliff by the seven dwarves and is smashed upon the rocks, presumably.
Now, to be clear, these dwarves are like magical dwarves, like dwarves and elves dwarves, not like little people dwarves.
I don't know. I mean, in the Disney version, they're not magical. They just are short people that mine for diamonds and gold and shit, but still can't hire a housekeeper.
Right. Like, I just assumed in the original that they were like dwarves, like magic dwarves. Like,
I mean, maybe, like, but like, folk, if they're like magic dwarves, wouldn't they know she's not dead?
I mean, maybe, but you got to turn a blind eye to these things, right?
I guess, yeah. Are you about halfway done with your cigar, Mike? Or
I am about halfway.
Okay, done. Well, then let's do that before we keep going.
It is a standard Maduro.
Yeah.
No better, no worse. It has no flavor change, which is a good thing because it tastes nice. So far, I would consider it to be a high-end yardstick, potentially golfer. Like, you could golf and smoke this. And
well, you know what I'm going to ask, don't you?
What is that?
Is it better or worse than a dark shark?
I would say it's slightly better, but it might be the same.
I would say I believe this is very much better than a dark shark in the sense that this has a fuller flavor, I think.
It does have a full profile.
I think the dark shark was kind of just like a, yeah, I guess it's a Maduro. It's not offensive, not overly dark. This one has a flavor profile. to its credit, you know. But I mean, that's why the Dark Shark is kind of like the standard, because it's inoffensive in almost every single way.
I would agree with you there.
Yeah, it is. I would just say so far, more flavorful than a Dark Shark. It's not a phenomenal Maduro at this point, but I would right now, if you ask me, I would rank it above a Dark Shark.
Maybe slightly. It's very similar. Very similar. Yeah. The Dark Shark is probably airier. This is a thicker smoke.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, exactly. So I guess it depends kind of on your preference there, but.
Right.
All right. Since we were talking about it, the next one is The Little Mermaid.
Yes.
Now, this is the only fairy tale, at least of the bunch that I found, that has originated with a single author, and that's Hans Christian Andersen. And he's a Danish author who wrote the original story that was first published in 1836, and it's a lot more violent than later versions. So in Hans Christian Andersen's version, the sea witch Ursula cuts Ariel's tongue out, and the mermaid's new feet bleed as if knives were stabbing her with each step. She can revert to a mermaid only if she murders the prince with a dagger. But because she can't force herself to kill him, she dies and transforms into sea foam. She might gain a human soul in around 300 years. In a moralizing twist, if children misbehave, this will take her longer. So it wasn't just about Ariel and the prince and wanting to walk on land. But now, all of a sudden, you've got the added guilt of 1836, where if you're a bad child, you're going to cause Ariel to not get her human soul right away.
So basically, the day that we no longer have sea foam is the day that Ariel is walking the land again. And we need to look for her.
No, at that time. Not walking the land. Swimming in the sea, she turns back to a mermaid.
I see. So then we have to do a search for mermaids.
Yeah, yeah, which I think the Titan was trying to find. They said it was the Titanic, but they were really looking for Ariel.
Well, the Titan shows everybody that safety is really not important.
Yeah, and you know, like a shitty third-party video game controller can take billionaires down to the ocean. Please, more billionaires, sign up. I also saw something where Ursula's not really a bad person. Like, if you look at the movie, the Disney movie, right? Like, she tells all the terms and conditions, and she doesn't force Ariel to sign, but Ariel signs and then kind of, like, goes back on the deal, so decides to kill her instead of actually paying the price of the contract. So take that for what it's worth.
Also, Ursula was based off of Divine, which everybody should know. Ursula in the Disney movie was based off Divine.
Yes. The next one is Cinderella. A bunch of versions, I guess. There's some in China, Egypt, and Greece. And I guess ableism is kind of a common thread in the Western European versions of it. And in the Grimm version of Cinderella, the stepsisters actually cut parts of their feet off to fit into the glass slipper. So they're deliberately making themselves disabled, thinking that their lives will become easier as royalty as a trade-off. But then birds pluck out the stepsisters' eyes because I guess Gandalf whispered to a moth and the birds came to pluck the eyes out. But a more modern version that keeps its ending is Into the Woods. So you can kind of see the original ending, but the Grimm's ending depicts disability as a punishment, curse, and symbol of evil. And in the oldest versions of the story, a more sinister Cinderella actually kills her first stepmother, so her father will marry the housekeeper instead.
Classy.
So that gets a little more intense. A little more intense. You know what I want? Instead of all of these, like, live action versions, remakes of animated versions, I want live action versions R-rated of the original fairy tales. Like, I think that would make
a great series. Like, they could do a mini series on HBO.
Well, you could do a mini series, or you could do like a mini franchise. Like, we're just, you know what? We're just gonna do the fucking gruesome, gory shit from the unedited Brothers Grimm. And here's the Brothers Grimm version of Cinderella, and everybody's cutting body parts off, and Cinderella's killing people. Let's do that.
Right, and you wouldn't have to pay any royalties, because nobody can own a story everything's that's like 200 from, years old.
Yeah, 200-300 years old. Little Red Riding Hood. I guess this is from the 11th century. There was a cleric and teacher named Egbert. Classic name, we should bring it back. He wrote down a precursor to Little Red Riding Hood. There's a 1697 French version that ends with the wolf eating the child, and she and her grandmother are not saved. The Grimm's version added morals to the tale. The French version spelled out the moral at the end. The Grimm's actually added a happy ending to their story. A hunter cuts the child and grandmother out of the wolf, who'd swallow them whole.
Huh.
But I guess in the original version, the they didn't make it. What are you going to do?
What are you going to do?
Okay, Beauty and the Beast, which people have had issues with, I think, because it's kind of like, what, Stockholm Syndrome, right? If you look at it, the Disney version, you know, she kind of willingly goes there in exchange for her dad, who's sick, then falls in love with Captor. So
yeah, the Beast.
The Beast. Most of the elements of this, well, the similar stories are found in India, China, Russia, and Norway. But the kind of modern version of it is a 1740 French novel, La Belle et la Bête, or something. I don't know. I'm not good at French. But the novel ends in an incestuous marriage. After the Beast turns back into a prince, Beauty learns that she and the Beast are first cousins. But, thank God, in 18th century aristocratic European society, it's not a deal breaker. In fact, it's proof they're a good match. Obviously, this is before Charles Darwin published anything, who also married a first cousin, by the by. So, Beauty and Beast were first cousins, and not a problem back then, but obviously now we know it's not the ideal marriage. Next one up is Goldilocks and the Three Bears. So there's an early version in which the bears set Goldilocks on fire and impale her on a cathedral steeple, which I guess they must have castle doctrine. You know what I mean?
Right. Like, I'm guessing so.
I don't know. Different times, that seems she sat in some chairs and ate some porridge and slept in a bed. So I think setting her on fire and impaling her. How would the bears get her up to a cathedral steeple? I don't know. It seems
talented
extreme.
Bears. Very talented bears.
Are they circus bears? They must be circus bears.
I'm going to guess that they're John Waters style bears.
Sure. Yeah. In the earlier versions, the intruder was actually an elderly woman named Silverlocks.
Interesting.
Not a little girl named Goldilocks. So instead of being a child too young to understand social rules, the character originally represented classist fears that poor people would break into wealthy people's houses. That's interesting.
Well, it's similar to what's going on today, isn't it?
I have no idea what you're talking about, Mike. All right, Hansel and Gretel. I'm just kidding, Mike. I got you. So it's a French fairy tale called Lost Children. And the brother and sister get lost in the woods. They're trapped in cages, and they're getting plumped up to be eaten. But it's not a wicked witch. It's the devil and his wife. The devil makes a sawhorse for the little boy to bleed to death on. Because what else is a little boy to bleed to death on, if not a sawhorse? But then the devil goes for a walk. Why wouldn't he? He just built a sawhorse. He's tired. And he tells the girl to get her brother situated on the sawhorse before a return. Because, of course, like, what sister wouldn't listen to the devil and help him bleed to death her brother, right?
Well, yeah.
All classic stuff. All classic stuff.
The friend of the show, Al, we were spending some time with him and his son. And yes, my wife told the story of Hansel and Gretel to his son. And he had never heard it. And she told him, the bare essentials. And he was quite surprised about how violent the story was.
Well, buckle up, because it gets worse. Or maybe not. The siblings pretend to be confused and ask the devil's wife to demonstrate how the boy should lay on the sawhorse. And when she shows them, they tie her to it and slit her throat. They then steal all the devil's money. This must be before he went down to Georgia and lost that fiddle contest. And they escape in his carriage. And he chases after them once he discovers what they've done. But he dies in the process because I guess, like, running is too much for the devil.
That's great.
Fucking weird, right? Yeah.
Why is there evil in the world? That's what I want to know.
I don't know. So Disney can make money making animated versions of it. All right, The Princess and the Frog, which is one of the more recent, in my opinion, like, we'd never had this one when we were kids, The Princess and the Frog, animated Disney one. But it's not the newest, like, it's still old compared to modern films, or, you know, like, 2024 films, I think, but it was after our childhood. But anyway, right. The Princess and the Frog, a selfish princess drops her golden ball into a well, and a frog offers to retrieve it in exchange for her friendship. She agrees, but then goes back on her word after getting the ball back and runs to her castle. The next day, she's eating with her father, the king, when the frog knocks on the door and requests to be let in. The king tells his daughter she must keep her promise, and she obeys. And the frog sits next to her and eats from her plate and then desires to sleep in the princess's bed. She's disgusted at the idea of sleeping with a frog, but her father angrily chastises her for loathing someone who helped her in a time of need. She picks up the frog and places him in the corner of her bedroom, but he hops up to the bed and demands to sleep as comfortably as the princess. Furiously, she throws the frog against the wall, but as he falls to the floor, he's transformed to a handsome prince. He explains that he was cursed by a wicked witch, and the spell could only be broken with the princess's help. And the next day, they get married, because it's a fucking fairy tale. Why not?
So she is kind of a nasty, unpleasant person.
She's a bitch. She's like everything Cinderella's stepsisters were in the animated movie. All right, we got a couple more. We're going to make it. It's going to be fine. Hunchback of Notre Dame. So it's based on a novel. The gypsy, Esmeralda, their words, not mine, resists the Archdeacon Frollo's advances, and that makes him angry. She disrupts the Feast of Fools. He trumps up an attempted murder charge on her and tries to hang her. But the hunchback swings down and saves her and takes her to the church where she's safe. But Frollo overturns the law, barges into the church to get Esmeralda. He tries to seduce her again, and after she refuses, he successfully hangs her. She's dead. In anger, Quasimodo pushes Frollo off the church tower to his death. And then he goes and lays next to Esmeralda, who's in a mass grave, of all things. And he dies of starvation. So a little bit different than the Disney version, slightly. They changed a few things.
Right, that's a Victor Hugo story. So
yeah,
they're all like that.
It's gonna be yeah, yeah. If you're unfamiliar with Victor Hugo, it's a surprise to you. If you're familiar with him, that's par for the course. Mulan. Now, I've never seen the live action Mulan. I've seen the other one, the animated one.
Apparently, I've never seen either.
Apparently, both of the Disney films follow fairly closely. It was it's a poem originally called The Ballad of Mulan. But there's a 1695 version that's included in the Su Tang romance. It takes a little bit darker turn. So Mulan takes her father's place in the army. She meets the king's daughter, who's also a warrior, and the two become inseparable. Then the king's defeated. They offer to be put to death in his place, but they're eventually spared. And then Mulan returns home and finds out that her father has died and her mother has remarried. And when her female identity is revealed, Mulan is ordered to become a concubine. But rather than do that, she commits suicide. I'm sorry, she runs the self-deletion protocol, or rather than become a concubine, which I believe is... Okay, so she runs... I'm sorry, I'm trying to algo-speak this for everybody. She self-deletes rather than become an OnlyFans girl.
Yes.
Which is weird, like after all the shit that she did. But I guess it's 1695. We can't have... the valor or something.
You can't have ladies stealing the valor, for sure.
Yeah, yeah. Valor is... 1695 valor is the man's duty. I said duty. But you know what? It's the man's anyway. All right. The next one. And this is the last one I have. I didn't look up things like Tom Thumb or Gulliver's Travels or things. I don't know that they're as fairy tale-ish as some of these other ones. You know what I mean?
And Tom Thumb was a real guy. He was a circus performer. And Gulliver's Travels was a novel based on Gulliver, and he went to multiple lands.
Yeah.
Lilliput was just one of them.
Well, yes.
Yes.
So, like I said, there's a lot of other things that people might consider fairy tales, but I don't think truly are, even though in modern times, the line is kind of blurred because we've gotten so far away from, like, the source time or the source time period, right? They easily could be, I guess. But I think this next one is timely, and this is the last one I have, because there is a third movie coming soon, much to the enjoyment and excitement of little children everywhere. But this next one is Frozen. Did you know Frozen was based off of an older fairy tale?
I did not.
Okay. Well, it was. It was. And guess who fucking wrote it?
The Brothers Grimm.
No, our main man, Hans.
Hans Christian
Andersen has a story called The Snow Queen. And Frozen is an empowering story of sisterly love and learning not to fear your power and knowing when to
let it go.
There you go, Mike. You got it. You already know, man. You already know. The Snow Queen has a much darker beginning, though, but it has a similarly happy ending. In Hans Christian Andersen's story, the devil makes a magic mirror which shows people only the bad and ugly aspects of themselves, which I say to you is like one of the trials that Atreyu had to go through in the Neverending Story. You remember when he came to that mirror?
I don't think I've ever seen that movie.
Show him the what? What's that?
I don't think I've ever seen the movie.
Oh, dude. That's going to be another... In a future episode of Nice Ashes, we will not only talk Neverending Story, but we will talk the differences between the American version of it and the original German version. I promise you this, in my next 4 years in office, we will talk about the Neverending Story. Anyway, that's neither here nor there. So there's a mirror that only shows people the bad and ugly bits of themselves. The mirror gets shattered and splinters gets into the eyes and hearts of people all around the world, freezing their hearts. Years later, the splinter gets into the eye of a boy called Kai, causing him to become cruel and reject his grandmother and best friend, Gerda, making him an easy target to be enchanted and imprisoned by the Snow Queen. When he disappears, it's assumed that Kai has fallen into the river and died, but Gerda is sure he's alive and begins an epic quest to rescue him. And this one has a lot of Christian themes, so Gerda has to say the Lord's Prayer to get past the trials and tribulations. So basically, this Snow Queen story is kind of like a Christian primer, and you have to do all these things that God wants you to do to triumph and get Kai back, I guess.
Well, that's very nice.
Praise the Lord.
Recently, I'm sure you heard, the woman who wrote Frozen for Disney got fired as the head of animation for Disney.
Oh, I did not hear that.
Yeah, she, I don't want to say demoted, but she got put as the head writer for Frozen 3. And I don't know if they've appointed a new head of animation. But,
okay. Well, I guess as long as she's still involved. So when Frozen first came out, I just hated the thought of it because, and only because the Let It Go song was everywhere and everybody was singing it and it was everywhere is all you could hear. Sometimes they put the marketing before the film and they kind of have to because they have to sell tickets, but I hated the song because it was everywhere. And I don't like hearing the same song a lot of times forcibly. Like, if I find a song I like, I'll listen to it a lot myself, but by choice. You know what I mean?
Yeah, I do. Because I have the same relationship with AC/DC, Lynyrd Skynyrd, and the Silver Bullet Band. I am just...
Okay.
I have heard those three bands way too many times. And they're great. They're great, but...
Oh, they're great bands, but... Yeah, and it's awesome. The same thing with certain Creedence Clearwater Revival songs. Like, the two songs they pick for anything in the Vietnam era? No. No.
I will never get over CCR. You take
I know. But like, you know, it's always Fortunate Son or Born in the Bayou or something, right? And it's like the helicopter's choppering through Nam. It's like, fuck. Like, there's got to be another song you can play, man.
Yeah. FYI.
And I love CCR. Like, I'm not... I hear those songs, and I'm like, fucking Nam. Like, the film's ruined the song for me because that's all they used.
Yeah. FYI, for those guys who don't know a bunch of Vietnam vets, I've talked to these guys. And, I talked to an old-timer, and I asked him about the Doors. And he didn't hear the Doors until the Doors were already not a band. Because he was in Vietnam for the entirety of the Doors being a band.
Yeah.
So those guys didn't hear any of those songs. Until they got home. Like, nothing. They had no contact with American culture, basically.
Yeah.
Yeah. It was like Good Morning Vietnam type of shit, where it's like, you can listen to classical music on the radio. Yeah, they were not in contact with what was going on. So, I always found that to be funny for the Vietnam films. It's like, did you not have a single Vietnam vet as your advisor to, like...
Yeah, advisor.
Yeah, and make this more realistic. These guys were not listening to CCR in Nam, okay?
No. Well, yeah, and the thing is, it was an interesting thing because not everybody went to Nam.
No.
But a lot of people did. But for the majority of Americans, they were listening to CCR on the radio while people in Vietnam were doing things in Vietnam, even though the people in Vietnam couldn't hear CCR or The Doors or any of, like, the protest songs. Right, there's this whole like protest movement that the people in Vietnam weren't even aware of.
Not if you got in early enough, you didn't.
Well, exactly. Yeah. I mean, some of them did for sure. When they came back, they 100% did know. But this was before TikTok and instant communication stuff. So they weren't knowing anything. I mean, but Vietnam was also the first war that was very, very televised. So the people at home had maybe almost more information about what was going on than the soldiers in Vietnam did.
Oh, for sure.
And not Vietnam, like, I'm not talking like tactical or strategic wise, but just like
the
people were there
the event,
fighting, yeah. And people at home could see it a week later or 2 weeks later. So it was almost like...
Right. And Vietnam was a conflict where the war veterans were on the TV criticizing the war while the war was going on.
Yeah.
Always interesting. That's a total break of topic from
Frozen.
Well,
no. Yeah, we don't have to get huge into the Vietnam stuff. But the point is, songs and things and music, if you're force-fed them, it kind of takes something that is good and degrades it. And I think Frozen's a great film now, watching it again, with some time from everybody singing Let It Go.
Oh, Frozen's a classic Disney film for sure. It's...
Yeah, and the second one's even good.
Putting the writer of Frozen as the head of animation for Disney may or may not have been a mistake, but the writer of Frozen's definitely a talented person. You know, she's...
Oh, yeah.
She's got some chops.
Yeah.
It's kind of like the Kathleen Kennedy situation. It's like, she should have been the right person to run the studio. Right? Should have been.
Yeah, well, it's funny because, like, we've been watching a lot of older stuff, and she's in the credits for, like, Back to the Future, even, as producer.
Oh, yeah, she was a part of...
One of the producers, right? Not the producer, but...
A part of the production of a quarter of the top 100 grossing movies ever made. I mean, she's got the chops,
yeah,
for sure.
Yeah, well, she's got chops to do something, and some people... Right. Some people. And I'm trying to remember a good story where this kind of, oh, yeah, it's fucking Star Trek, man. So it's kind of like Star Trek, right? So Captain Kirk is like a kick-ass captain. I mean, not really if you look at everything. Like, he puts everybody in danger and blah, blah, blah. But he always comes out on top because he's willing to cheat and bend the rules and all that stuff.
Hey, he's a cowboy. Cowboys in space.
Yeah. But he gets promoted to admiral and, like, he can't do jack shit. So he gets himself demoted back to captain. Right. So he can go and do the cowboy shit in space that he's good at. And I feel like that's kind of like Kathleen Kennedy. Like, she is good at being like a producer, not executive producer, but she's good at being producer and helping the executive producer do the executive producing stuff and being not the named person, but an assistant to the main person. Not that that's what a producer versus executive producer is, but you know what I mean? Like, she's good at that producer role, but not good at executive producer, not good at head of studio.
No, her time as head of studio has been a disaster.
I think, like, yeah, I mean, I you know, as much as we sit and bitch and moan about Kathleen Kennedy, but some people are better in support roles and some people are better at the head roles, and that people in head roles need the people that are good at support roles in order to be good at head roles. Kind of thing, you know what I mean?
Oh, yeah. Well, she was the last woman standing from that era, which is why she got the job, and she deserved it at the time.
Yeah.
She was the last one of the old guard left, so of course you put her in charge. It makes total sense. It makes all the sense in the world.
Well, it makes sense, yeah. But at some point, like, you got to know what you can't do, too.
Right.
To some extent.
Yeah, her limitations were definitely seen, and whether or not it was her fault or not, she played along with bad politics, for sure. So,
yeah, and whatever the failings are or aren't, like, there's a graceful way to step back and let the people that should be doing it do it. And I don't know who that is. I don't keep up with the ins and outs of what's going on at Disney, but, you know, there's a graceful way to say, hey, I'm just going to be kind of head of studio and not really be that involved in the day-to-day of making the Force female or lesbian space witches or whatever the fuck they're trying to do with everything else, and say, no, I found somebody that I can task with this role to do it. She might still have final say because she's head of studio, but she doesn't have to be, you know what I mean, like the executive producer on everything, or she can give some of that up if she knows she can't do it, right? And that, I think that's the sign of a good person, is like, if you know you can't do it, there's no shame in admitting you can't do it, or no shame in admitting somebody else can do it better than you, and you trust them.
Right. And I'll take the opposite point here, because I don't know the ins and outs. She might have delegated too much. It's a possibility.
Well, that could be. That's also a possibility.
Delegated too much and didn't want to admit it after the fact. you know, in for a penny, in for a pound kind of situation.
Yeah, well, it's the same thing in like corporate America is you have a problem with your boss, that's too fucking bad. And you know what they tell you is go to your boss's boss. Well, guess what your boss's boss is going to tell you? I hired that person that's your boss, so you go fuck off.
Right.
And that could very well be the same thing, where it's kind of like you get into that situation where the ego is more important than actually getting stuff done or doing well, you know?
Yes, sir.
But were there any fairy tales you thought we'd talk about but didn't? Maybe Peter Pan. I don't know. Is Peter Pan a fairy tale?
Peter Pan's a fairy tale, but it's also a novel.
Yes, I mean, same with Alice in Wonderland. Like, that's a novel. I read the novel.
I've heard it's really weird. I have not read.
It's strange, man.
Yeah, I've not read. I have read Gulliver's Travels, and it would be a very interesting movie, but they wouldn't make it because it's all imperialistic and shit, so.
Yeah, I've got one. I've got a copy of that on my Kindle to read. I found a unabridged PDF somewhere and ported it to my Kindle, so. I will eventually be reading it.
Yeah, it's good. Jonathan Swift's a satirist, so you have to read between the lines.
I love his let's kill all the fat kids and eat them.
On Ireland or...
yeah, whatever it is.
Whatever it was, yeah.
On hunger, I don't know what the fuck.
Yeah, it was the Irish problem. Hilarious. Or something like that.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I actually wrote an essay in college, Jonathan Swift, and got into quite a bit of hot water over it.
Of course you did.
So mine was on assisted suicide, and I titled it Suicide is Painless in homage to MASH, opening theme song. And it did not go over well, and I had to have a conversation with the professor after the fact that did not go entirely great. So
I once had a writing assignment where we had to write an essay about some bullshit topic, and we had like an hour and a half to do it, right? I, of course, being me,
did just bowling.
15 sentences, 5 paragraphs, 3 paragraphs, you know, a piece, or 3 sentences a piece.
Yeah.
And I did the exact formula of how to write an essay, but just with one sentence. One sentence, you know? Like one part, you know, you break it up into your parts, and it was one sentence succinct. And I got a passing grade, and I thought that I was like, it took me a lot of work. It was more work to do it this way
than it was
to actually write some long-ass essay. In an hour and a half on the fly.
Nobody appreciates that. Appreciates that.
No, they didn't appreciate it at all. But my teacher did. But my teacher was not directly grading it. It was for some national thing that we were mandated to send an essay into.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, where's the creative energy? This is a creative writing thing. Come on now.
Yeah. You got to fall between the lines, Mike.
That's right.
If you're writing a Vietnam story, it's got to fucking have CCR, dude.
Yeah, or the Doors. Got to have the Doors.
Yeah, that too. There's actually a movie, I can't remember what it was. I'll have to look it up. But it was a Vietnam era movie, and they had absolutely zero CCR. And I was like, holy shit, this is a breath of fresh air. I wish I could remember what it was, but I don't.
Yeah, like I say, the music soundtracks of Vietnam movies always throws me, because after that conversation where it's like, I was in Vietnam for the entirety of the Doors career. They were already done as a band when I got home. Like,
Yep. Yeah. I mean, that's what you get when you get people kind of, you know, I mean, writers, right? You can write really good stuff, but you're basically only, you're researching what you're writing about. And depending on how good of a job you do researching it, kind of dictates how authentic it is to people that actually lived what you're writing about.
Well, let's face it, most of the artists are not the ones who are actively participating in what they're writing about.
Well, yeah, that is true. But you could be a good writer without having lived through a lot of things if you understand, you know, like human nature and stuff like that. You can tell a really good story, but sometimes you get co-opted by the music supervisor who says you should have CCR in your Vietnam movie. Even if it's not historically accurate.
Well, yeah, CCR made songs about Vietnam, so you got to have at least one of those.
Well, of course they did, yeah. I mean, but you have to have, like, you can't have a Vietnam movie and not have the counter-revolution, you know, societal revolution against it in there. You know, it'd be almost more refreshing to have a Vietnam movie about a Vietnam vet who comes back and is like, what the fuck, you guys have all been hating this war? Like, what's going on here? You know what I mean? Like, that'd be more interesting to me.
Oh, you mean like Rambo First Blood?
Yeah, Rambo First Blood. That's why that one's so good.
Yeah, it's great. It's great.
Rambo First Blood is a fantastic fucking film.
Yeah,
it's 2 and 3 are shit. But like the fourth one is great too. I haven't, and I think I've seen the other ones. Like, what are they, 5 and 6 now? But like, it's the first one. The second one's, I think, is okay. The third one, is the third one the one where they have that Asian lady who speaks with a terrible English accent?
Yeah, I think the third one, this is the one where he goes back to Vietnam and shoots
arrows that explode. That one's like the worst.
Yeah, yeah.
That one's the fucking worst. And then the second one, he's like fighting the Taliban or fighting with the Taliban or something. So it didn't age well.
Yeah, he's fighting with the Mujahideen against Soviet Russia, I believe.
Okay.
Yeah.
But the first one's great. And then the fourth one is great. I think that one was just called Rambo because at the end of it, he like walks back home. So like, I think the first one and the fourth one are the only two you need to watch because it kind of like those two kind of wrap up his story, I think. And then you don't need all the extra bullshit of 2 and 3 and then 5. And I don't know if there's a 6, but
it's
one of those ones where you don't need that many of them.
Right. Yeah. Rambo. Well, the first Rambo is like a movie you really have to watch to enjoy.
Yeah. Yeah. The first one. And it's funny because they call him like a dirty hippie and everything. And it's like he was out fighting, man.
Yep. We don't need your kind around here.
Yeah.
Which sums up the post-Vietnam experience for a lot of guys, from what I understand.
But. Yeah, unfortunately, yeah. I'm putting my cigar out because it's hot and burning my fingers, Mike.
Mine's hot. I got about an inch left. No, I don't. I have 3/4 of an inch left. And okay. It's good. No flavor change for me.
No
Very flavor stable. Very good as far as a mid-grade, perfectly adequate Maduro goes.
I rated it a 3.5 just because... I don't know. It's I enjoyed it. It wasn't overly complex. It wasn't overly anything, really, but it had a good flavor throughout that stayed consistent.
Yep. I rated it 3.25 because it is better than the Dark Shark. But
it's better than the Dark Shark. There's other Maduros I would likely rather smoke. But again, like this is one where I don't know what the price point for this is necessarily, but this one I wouldn't, like I bought a whole bunch of those fucking Dark Sharks, you know what I mean? Like they came in a huge bundle and I kind of now wish that I just got the bundle of this instead.
Right. If I remember correctly, I got these for like $2.
Yeah. I'm so like $2.
This was a $2 stick. Yeah.
This is like a great $2 stick then, you know? I mean, I would much rather have this than a Dark Shark. There's a lot of things I would much rather have than a Dark Shark. And a Dark Shark's not terrible, but in terms of just like something that is like, this is pretty much like the quintessential Maduro. It's consistent throughout, which is pretty phenomenal for the price point. It's not overly spicy. It's not overly dark. It's not overly nicotine, you know, content, but...
No, it has a pretty low nicotine.
It's enjoyable.
It's very enjoyable. If I saw this at a golf course, I would buy it.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's fine. Go out and smoke one on the porch. I don't think I'd want to sit down at a shop and have one.
I wouldn't do that. I mean, this is one of those ones, again, like we talk about, you know, like the yardstick or the mowing the lawn stick, or it's one where it's like you're smoking it, it's fine. If like a rainstorm comes through and you have to put it out and go inside, you're not bummed. Like, oh no, I wasted $1 on the half I didn't smoke.
Yeah, you're not standing in the garage like, to finish it.
Yeah, yeah. It's not the Siri R. It's not the V660. But I don't know. I would smoke this one over a Dark Shark any day. This like a Dark Shark, I'd be like, I'd smoke it.
Yeah, but, the Dark Shark is what you have after you have a couple beers, and you're like, well, anything is going to be fine, really.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, the Dark Shark is. I don't have to remember what I'm smoking, so you know, I want to smoke something. It might as well be a Dark Shark.
Right, exactly.
But this could easily take the place at the price point because I feel like the Dark Shark is the same price, so.
Very similar price, yeah.
Yeah, so this, I think this is the clear winner between the Dark Shark and this one. There's other Maduros Mike and I would rather smoke, which makes sense, but I think this is better than the Dark Shark. This is probably, I don't know, would you call this like the new budget Maduro?
I would say that this is a budget Maduro and it's a very good standard to go by. Because it is good.
Yeah.
It's good to roll. Yeah. Yeah. It's thick. Got the thick smoke that you want out of a full-bodied cigar. And it has the flavor profile of a Maduro with no bitterness and no acetone or any unpleasantness at all.
Literally all the way to the end. Like, it didn't get sour and my fingers were burning. So
I would have smoked it.
That's a win.
I would have smoked it forever. I mean, it was a good, it's a good smoke. So I would say it's a good standard to judge other cigars by, for sure.
Yes, I agree. I think it's important to remember that a lot of the fairy tales that are out there are a lot more morbid and violent than the versions published today. I don't know if that's a warning or a disclaimer or whatnot, but I wonder, what do you think, Mike? Do you think the more violent and morbid fairy tales lead to a better society, or do the happier endings lead to a better society? I know we talk about like the softening of language and everything frequently on the show. I'm curious on your takes.
I think it's a reflection of the society. I don't think it builds the society, right?
No.
1600, 1800, pretty hard times. I think it was Douglas Murray who said that the 14th century was pretty difficult for everyone, no matter who you were. Yeah. So,
yeah, pretty much.
Yeah, the 14th century, not an easy time for anybody who was alive. So if you are taking these stories from that era, they're probably going to be pretty dark. His life in general was harsh for everyone, even if you were rich and powerful. So I think that these weak stories that we have now are just a reflection of how soft people are because of how easy life is in the West and in modern society, generally speaking, for most everyone. Obviously, there's exceptions.
I guess, like, the older versions of a lot of these are a lot more violent and brutal, but the moral isn't necessarily different.
No. The moral of the stories.
So I guess, like, the ultimate kind of question is, to understand the moral, do you need the violent, morbid stuff? Or does a nose that grows every time you tell a lie, is that enough? Or does the puppet need to be hanged at the end?
Right. And the original stories were exciting for adult readers who were the people reading the fairy tales. It wasn't like the concept of the novel didn't really exist in 1600 in the same way it does now.
Well, wasn't the first novel Beowulf?
You could argue that. There's an argument about... Oh, that's an ancient story. Right. I think it's 1200 is when it was written down. Oh,
okay.
Initially. Let's look it up. Google the show, everybody.
Let's do it. We're here. We're now. As fast as mice internet connection.
Yeah. Japan had the first official novel, which was written in the 11th century. But that was not a Western work. So
that doesn't make it any less legitimate, Mike.
No, it does not. But since we weren't exposed to that until at least the 1860s.
True.
The first Western novel was written in 1902. Let's just put it this way. Of course, I'm trying to like look this up and they're like, oh, this and that. Don Quixote was 1605. That's generally considered to be the first one, which was, of course, pretty crazy. Robinson Crusoe, which was 1719, was one of the first novels that broke from more traditional storytelling. So like a novel, like you can read Robinson Crusoe now and recognize it like a novel.
Well, when was like the Iliad?
The Iliad is an ancient Greek story. That's not a novel, though. That's like an epic poem.
Okay, sure.
Yeah. And that's the same with Beowulf, which is an epic poem, or Gilgamesh is an epic poem. They're not really...
Okay.
Yeah. Yeah, and then... The Tale of Genji, which I haven't read it yet, is Japanese. Okay. That was written in 1100.
Well, maybe that's a future episode.
Yeah. And that's like a court romance style novel.
Okay.
So I know a little bit about the background, but I haven't read it myself.
Sure.
Yeah.
Sure. Well, reading is good.
Yeah, reading is good. People should
do more of it. Audiobooks are also reading. So I don't know if other people tell you, but read audiobooks, consume the media, not the media. Consume the written word any way you can, and maybe not the news or reality TV.
Well, no matter what you read, it's probably better for you than whatever slop they're putting on your screen.
Yeah, that's true. Very true. Until Mike and I build our production company and do the morbid versions of the fairy tales.
Lots of mom tits. That's what we're going to have.
Mom tits and
sharks in the corn.
Marionettes being hanged.
So.
Or something.
Isn't that funny? The one thing I really remember well from Sharks of the Corn is like the graphic nudity with the blood. And it's like normal ass looking women, which is rare in movies, of course.
Yeah, but it's like, but this is like the B-est of B movies of all time.
Yeah, it's like one of the producer's girlfriends or sisters or something. You know what I mean? Like,
yeah, or like his fucking wife, right?
Yeah, it could
like,
be. Yeah, it could be his wife. It could be his cousin. Whatever. Right? Like, it's not there. It's not particularly sexual.
Babe, trust me, babe. It's integral to the plot that you're naked in this scene.
Yes.
Also, here's some red tinted corn syrup.
Yep. Run through the corn.
Yep. There's a shark here. We'll add it in post, but they didn't. It's just a fin. So.
Yeah. Here's a Quonset hut with some dollar store, quote unquote, satanic objects.
Yes. It's the best we could find in short time in Des Moines, Iowa.
Exactly.
So. Yep. Here we go. And roll.
Yep. Not the hottest chick in Des Moines, but a chick from Des Moines.
Yeah. I mean, you know.
Like I say,
you're splitting hairs, Mike. You're splitting hairs.
Yeah. Just a woman. Like, you know.
Yeah. It's fine. It's all good.
Oh, it's great. Like, it's
everybody,
like I say, it was refreshing.
Everybody is beautiful. Everybody is beautiful. Sharks in the Corn, check it out.
I recommend it. Two thumbs up.
Oh, yeah. It's great. It's a great one.
So.
Anyway, thanks for listening.
Be safe. Have fun.